The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 12, text number 8, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 26, 2007, in Sydney, Australia.
So today we are studying from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 12, text number 8, page number 621.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Mayeva mana adhatsva,
mayeva mana adhatsva,
mayi buddhin niveshaya,
mayi buddhin niveshaya,
nivashishyasi mayeva,
nivashishyasi mayeva,
ata urdhvang na sanshaya,
ata urdhvang na sanshaya.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. Purport. One who is engaged in Lord Krishna's devotional service lives in a direct relationship with the Supreme Lord. So there is no doubt that his position is transcendental from the very beginning. A devotee does not live on the material plane. He lives in Krishna. The holy name of the Lord and the Lord are non-different. Therefore, when a devotee chants Hare Krishna, Krishna and his internal potency are dancing on the tongue of the devotee. When he offers Krishna food, Krishna directly accepts these eatables, and the devotee becomes Krishnaized by eating the remnants. One who does not engage in such service cannot understand how this is so. Although this is a process recommended in the Bhagavad Gita and in other Vedic literatures. So, if you want to actually get the full value of your human form of life, then you must understand what is the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Without this knowledge, there is no way that you can actually become happy and satisfied in your life. Although you may temporarily think you are happy and satisfied, in the ultimate issue, you will be greatly disappointed. Why is that? Because we are not these bodies. I am not male. I am not female. I am not white. I am not black. I am not Indian. I am not American. I am not Australian. Jivera Swarupo Hoi Krishnera Nitya Das. The constitutional position of the living being is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. So unless we understand the words of Krishna and engage ourselves in the service of Krishna, no matter what advancement we may make in this world, it won't amount to very much, because it comes and it goes. In this connection, there is a nice story. There was one time a yogi in the India. He was meditating near an Indian village on the bank of the river. And sometimes it would become very, very hot in the summer. He had no shade. He stood in the hot sun, the hot blazing sun. You see. And sometimes in the winter it would become very, very cold. And he had no shelter to warm up. He would be in the freezing cold. He would be in the scorching sun, the wind, the rain, the insects, you know. It was pretty austere situation. So the villagers, they thought there is this great sadhu. He is meditating near our village. We should do some pious work. We should serve this sadhu. We should give him a nice hut. We should build him a nice cottage so he can live comfortably on the bank of the river. So they offered him, they made that offer to him. This sage was not an ordinary sage. He had a boon that he would live for a very, very long time. If you study Vedas, you will know that Brahmaji, he has a very long lifespan. 311 trillion years lifespan, Brahmaji. So, this yogi, he had a great boon. That he would live for one lifetime of Brahma, which is 311 trillion years. He would live for one lifetime of Brahma for every hair he had on his body. Now, I want to inform you in this connection. He was very hairy also. So, you can imagine how long of a lifespan he would have. In other words, every time the universe is destroyed, continues living. He lives beyond the whole universe is destroyed, but he is not killed. He continues universe after universe, continuing with his meditation. So, we can understand he had a very, very, very long lifespan. So, the villagers said, we want to build you one hut so you can be a little comfortable when you're doing all these penances and austerities. He said, why bother? I'm only here temporarily. No, thank you. So we have to learn from this hairy sage, who is a very, very wise man, you see. We have to learn a lesson from this hairy sage. Not to be so concerned for our temporary arrangements in this material world, you see. Our lifespan is nothing compared to his, you see. Trillions and quadrillions, you can just imagine, quadrillions of years he would be living. But he was not very concerned. For our 50, 60, 70, 80 years, we make a big deal out of it. Oh, I have to have this, I have to have that. So many things I must have. You see. So, it's not that we have to imitate the yogi and meditate on the bank of the river in the scorching sun and the freezing winter. No. But we do have to do one thing. And that is, we must understand what is Bhagavad Gita. And we must live our lives in such a way that is pleasing to Lord Krishna. Because if we can do this, then we will achieve perfection. In one lifetime, in one simple short lifetime, we can achieve spiritual perfection just by understanding and implementing the instructions that are found here in the Bhagavad Gita. So what is Krishna saying? He is saying, fix your mind upon me. Engage your intelligence in me. See, we have these two things. We have a mind and we also have an intelligence. The mind is the pivot point for all the senses. It accepts things and it rejects things. But there is something higher than the mind. That is the intelligence. The intelligence is the discriminating factor. With your intelligence, you can decide what you want to absorb your mind in, what you do not want to absorb your mind in. Some people want to absorb their minds in pornography, for example, but they are not very intelligent, you see. An intelligent person, a discriminative person, he will think, let me engage my mind in those things which uplift my consciousness, which take me beyond the gross bodily platform to the spiritual platform. So, if we engage our intelligence nicely in Krishna, naturally we will want to fix our mind also on Krishna. And what will be the result? Krishna says, you will live in me always, without a doubt. So, right now, we may feel how we are living in Sydney. But if we become keeping the mind always fixed on Krishna, we will no longer be living in Sydney, although we will appear to be living in Sydney. We will not actually be living in Sydney. We will be living in Krishna at every minute. So, Krishna is a much better place of residence than Sydney, you see. You can live in Krishna, or Melbourne also. Krishna is much better than Melbourne.
You see. Transition for us.
Because in Krishna, when you live in Krishna consciousness, then you transcend the sufferings of this material existence. And this material existence, we suffer four different kinds of miseries: birth, death, old age, and disease. But when you come to Krishna consciousness, then you become transcendental to birth, death, old age, and disease. You no longer go through these things. You may say, but I see the devotees are getting old and dying. How you can say they don't go through these things? But actually they don't. Because they cease to identify with the material body. The material body is just something happening out there in the external energy, that's all. It has nothing to do with the self. So a devotee, even though his body may be getting old and sick and dying, he is not pinched. He is not tormented by them. He simply tolerates it, thinking, well, this is my last time and I'm out of here for good. Just like someone may have some job they don't like very much. They're working for some company. And they really hate their job, but what they can do, they need a livelihood. Then they apply for a promotion to some job that they really like. You see, they've got accepted and they're getting promoted. And now it's their last day at the old job they hate. They're blissful. Because they know this is the last day. You see? So you know they're still there in the job they hate. They know, but this is my last day. No problem. They have a big smile on their face. You know, Monday I'll be starting my new job. You see? So a devotee, even though he's still going through birth, death, old age, and disease on the material level, you see. But he knows, I'm out of here. I won't have to keep going through this forever and forever and forever and forever, birth after birth after birth. He knows that because I have taken shelter of Sri Guru and Sri Krishna, now my suffering in this material world is finished. I'm going back to home, back to Godhead. So he's ecstatic. Completely blissful. He's chanting Hare Krishna. He's offering his food to Krishna. In this way, he's very, very jolly and happy. It's interesting, some finer philosophical points here. It says, one who is engaged in Lord Krishna's devotional service lives in a direct relationship with the Supreme Lord. Now, we always hear that actually we approach through the meeting of Guru, you see. Don't we usually say that? And that's true. We don't have a direct relationship with Krishna. We relate through the spiritual master. But here, the opposite thing is being stated. The devotee has a direct relationship with Krishna. So how is that? Is there a contradiction in the philosophy here? Is this contradictory? Well, just consider this. Now I'm speaking to you. I'm directly speaking to you, isn't it? But what if I was on the other side of Sydney and I was talking to you on a mobile phone? Would I be directly speaking to you or not? I'm still directly talking to you through the medium of the mobile phone. So just because we approach Krishna through the medium of Guru doesn't mean we don't have a direct relationship with him, you see. We are still directly connected. Prabhupada says it is simultaneously direct and indirect. And he also says there's no doubt that his position is transcendental from the very beginning. Now that's another interesting point. We may think, well, I'm just a neophyte devotee, you know, right now I'm on the mundane plane. Someday I'll get to a transcendental position. But the real fact is, one who is engaged in devotional service is on the transcendental platform from the very beginning. So we have no reason to hesitate. Say, I don't really want to get into this devotional service because, you know, you have to make so much progress before you really get anywhere. No. From the very first step of taking up devotional service, you are situated on the transcendental plane. So what is that first step? Do you know what is that first step? The first step is you have to hear. If you hear from the bona fide spiritual master, simply by that hearing process, you have begun your pathway back to home, back to Godhead. And then if you will chant the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then you will feel how Krishna is dancing on your tongue, as described here. You will feel how you are advancing step by step by step with every bead on the japa mala. With every bead, you are moving forward in Krishna consciousness. And if you will offer your food to the Lord before eating, then just by taking that prasad, that Krishna prasad, you undergo an experience which is called Krishnaization. Would you like to be Krishnized, you see? The Christians have something they call being baptized, you see. But we have what's called being Krishnized, you see. By hearing about Krishna, by chanting Hare Krishna, by eating the foodstuffs offered to Krishna, by remembering Krishna, by bowing down to Krishna, all these different things, they give you the wonderful experience of being Krishnized. So what is the benefit of being Krishnized? Krishna, it says here, is Krishnaized, yes. The benefit of being Krishnaized is that you regain your original spiritual nature. You see, you're not actually a woman. You're not actually a man. You're not actually an Indian or an Australian. You are none of these things. You are an eternal spiritual being in quality, one with God. God is eternal, you are eternal. God is full of knowledge, you are full of knowledge. God is full of bliss, you are full of bliss. So when you become Krishnaized, then you become free from the misidentification with the temporary, ignorant, miserable material body, and you revive your full recollection of your eternal full of knowledge, full of bliss nature. That's what it means to be Krishnaized. You're transformed from asat achit nirananda, temporality, ignorance, and misery, to satchit ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. We actually took a survey the other day at the temple last Sunday. How many people would prefer being Krishnaized? I asked them how many people would like would prefer eternity, knowledge, and bliss over temporality, ignorance, and misery. Everybody raised their hand. It was unanimous. Everybody in the whole temple room said they would much rather be eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, than temporary, full of ignorance and misery. So that means everybody desired to be Krishnaized. So what about you all? Would you like to be Krishnaized? Yes? Would you like to experience eternity, knowledge, and bliss at every minute? To become millions and millions of miles away from the anxieties of material existence? Even while you're going about your ordinary duties of job and family and traffic jams and all that kind of stuff? You see? You can be completely beyond this material existence. Whether you're a student, whether you're a prime minister, whether you're a king or a toilet cleaner, it doesn't matter, you see. Whatever your position, if you become Krishnaized, then you will be ecstatic. So, we have come today to help you all become Krishnaized. So, if we want to be Krishnaized, then we must have Krishna eyes. In other words, we must have always the eye that wants to see Krishna. We have to want to see Krishna, always desiring to see Krishna. That's a very important thing. We actually have a prayer like that, Jagannath Swami, Nayana Patagami, Bhava to me. We are praying to Jagannath, to Krishna, please come to my vision, you see. This desire to see Krishna, it is very good desire. One has to know what are the qualifications, you see. It's not that you can take one rocket ship from NASA and you can force your way into the kingdom of God by brute force. No, by love, you see, you can see Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksa daiva hridayeshu valokayanti yang shama shundaram achintanyu ganasva rupam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. If you will have your eyes anointed with premanjana, you know that Sanskrit word anjana? It has appeared in English as the word ungamant, which means also, it's also ointment. The ointment or the ungament of love of God, prem anjana. If you will anoint your eyes, if you will Krishnaize your eyes, you see, with this ointment of love of God, then gradually as your vision recovers, you will see Krishna everywhere. You will see Krishna within, and you will see Krishna without wherever you go. Actually, it is not difficult to see Krishna. If you will simply remember the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, you will see Krishna everywhere. Doesn't Krishna say that? Rasoham apsukontaya prabhashmi shashishuryayo pranavasarvasarvasvedeshu shabdake parishangashu. He says, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of the water. I am the light of the sun and the moon. See, this is, there is no electric light in this room. This room is completely being illuminated by sunlight. So as we are all looking out in this room, we are all seeing the sunlight. This is sunlight bouncing off everything. It's all sunlight. So actually we are all seeing Krishna right now. Every one of us is seeing, even the little children. Everyone is seeing Krishna because he says, I am the light of the sun. And when the moonlight comes out, that is also Krishna, you see. So we simply have to Krishnaize our eyes by learning how to see Krishna within everything. Even if one's desire to see Krishna is material, still one becomes purified. You know, there was one time a thief. Of course, there are many thieves. But this thief, he had the good fortune of wanting to... There was some lecture going on, just like now we have Bhagavad Gita lecture. So there was a Bhagavatam lecture going on. The thief thought, oh, this looks like a very good opportunity to steal. He came into the assembly looking for some wallet or purse he could steal, you see. He didn't find any, but he heard the speaker. He was saying, there's this boy named Krishna, a little child, you see, who's loaded with valuable jewels. And he wanders all alone in the forest, a forest known as Vrindavan. So the thief became very excited. Oh, there's a little boy with no parents protecting him, loaded with millions of rupees, crores of rupees worth of jewels. Where is that Vrindavan? I will go there. I will steal the jewels and become a millionaire overnight. So the thief, he took off to Vrindavan. He found out where it was. He started walking across India, you see, to go to Vrindavan. He finally arrived. Braj Mandal area, it's a big, it's a huge area. Even when you take a jeep to go to the opposite side, it takes many, many hours, just even a jeep. So he... For weeks and weeks, he was wandering all over Braj Mandal. Where is that Krishna? Where is that Krishna? Where is that Krishna? You see? Intensely, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? You see? When will I see that boy so I can get those jewels? So one night, Krishna revealed himself. He was very kind, even though his desires were completely lusty, greedy, material desires. Still, Krishna was very kind. He revealed himself to that thief. And then he said, oh, Krishna, you are loaded with so many valuable jewels. Can you give me some? Krishna said, no, no, no. Mother Yashoda will scold me. I cannot give you. Mother Yashoda will chastise me if I give you any jewels. Krishna, even though he is God himself, you see, he is playing the role of being the being afraid of Mother Yashoda's scolding. So the thief, he was determined, no, please can you give me... Actually, Krishna was very kind. That thief, just by that intense desire to see Krishna, he became completely purified of all of his material desires. And then Krishna said, all right, you can take. So in this way, if somehow or other we have a very strong desire to see Krishna, then our hearts will become transformed. If we can Krishnaize our eyes, if we can Krishnaize our ears, Krishnaize our tongue, engage everything in contact with Krishna, you see, hearing about Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, tasting the prasad of Krishna, associating with the bona fide spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. In this way, if we can make everything connected with Krishna, then Krishna will be very kind. He will reveal himself to us, you see. And all of our material desires will be finished. We will simply be swimming in an ocean of the sweetest nectar in the association of Krishna. So, kindly take this pathway very seriously. Do not spoil your life simply running after the flickering, illusory pleasures of this world. Take whatever happiness, material sense gratification you need to keep body and soul together. That is all right. Everyone needs to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So take whatever is necessary, but put your balance energy into cultivating your Krishna consciousness. Please, this is our humble request to you. Please seriously take up this path of Krishna consciousness. Begin chanting the Japa Mala. How many of you chant Japa Mala every day? One, two, three, four, five, six. How many?
I do only one round.
One?
One round only.
That's the very beginning. Now you can quadruple it. You can do four rounds.
So I don't know whether to raise my hand or
not. Huh?
So I did not know whether to raise my hand or not, whether one round qualifies or...
Whether one round qualifies or not, so whether he should raise his hand or not.
Because I thought you had to do the 16 rounds.
Actually, no one is stopping you. Go ahead, chant 16. I was not chanting any japa, but the devotees invited me for a Lord Chaitanya festival in Dallas. So I spent the night at the temple. In those days, we didn't have any connection with India. If we wanted japa mala, we had to go to the hobby store and buy some wooden beads and string them ourselves. We had no connection with India for trading, getting any devotional supplies. So a bunch of people said, we got a whole bunch of us, went to the hobby store. We got some beads, we came back, we strung our chanting beads, and I chanted 16 rounds the first day. And I've been chanting them ever since. So no one's stopping you. You can chant 16 rounds today, I don't mind. Everyone should chant as much as possible, you know. Even if you don't think you can chant 16 every day, at least chant them today. And you might be surprised that you're able to chant them tomorrow and the next day and the day after that. And you may be surprised at how the holy name carries you away. And how you find so much taste in the name, you don't even want to put the beads down. You keep getting so much juice, so much sweetness, so much nectar. It's like the ultimate gulab jamun. You see? Oozing with gulab jamun juice. That name, the name of Krishna, has so much juice. You see? Namamrita. You see? It can fill up a whole ocean. Namamrita Sindhu. That name has so much juice. You can have a whole ocean of juice from that name. And you can dive into that name and go swimming, you see. And if there are waves on that ocean, you can surf on those waves, you see. Ride those waves of Namamrit. Back to home, back to Godhead. So, nothing. Everyone, kindly take up this chanting on the beads. Work your way up to 16. Chant the follow the regulated principles. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, and no gambling. And then, when you are recommended by the local devotees, you can become initiated disciples. And that means after you get diksha, then you have special shakti. You get special bhakti shakti at the time of diksha to empower your chanting, to empower your reading, to empower your remembrance. It is a great boon to get diksha. It is not simply some ceremony. You now become empowered in your practice. So everyone should be very, very eager to qualify themselves for diksha, because then you really get moving and your bhakti really starts moving then after diksha. If you follow the instructions carefully, Prabhupada explains that diksha, the time of diksha, you become immortal. He said, deathlessness begins at the moment of initiation. He told us in Los Angeles. You achieve immortality. It's not that you have to wait until your body drops dead and you go back to Godhead to become immortal. At the time of diksha, you achieve immortality. Because you completely detach yourself from the bodily conception. You simply fully absorb yourself in devotional service. You have already entered the spiritual world at the time of diksha, actually. You're no longer living in Sydney. You see. So yes, increase your chanting. Follow the principles. Qualify yourself for diksha. You'll be glad you did. Does anybody have any questions? Anybody having finding any impediments on the pathway of bhakti for moving forward? Everyone's finding there's no impediment. It's just going like, you know, the river flowing back to the sea. Naturally flowing to Krishna's lotus feet. Yeah.
Everyone said they would like to have eternity, knowledge and blissful life. So, are they ready to take up the austerity of getting that? Just like for day to day,
yeah.
Even to get one meal, we work hard jobs and all that.
Yeah.
To get the eternity, knowledge and bliss, we have to do something.
Yes. How hard do you work to earn your livelihood? You see, you spend so many years in the university to get training. You go through such an austerity to find somebody who will hire you. And you go through such austerity to get out there on Monday morning in the traffic to get to your job and to get a car, make a car that's working. So many austerities just to get that paycheck. You see, isn't it? So many austerities get some little piece of paper, you know, paycheck. And it comes and it goes. You can't even keep it. It's all, you know, you give, how many months of the year do you have to work just to pay the taxes of the government? You know, major portion is all just going into the Australian government. You're working for the Australian government, you know, just on taxes. You work so hard and you get so little of it, really, for yourself. Very, very little of it for yourself. The landlord gets his chunk. The car, the automobile company gets its chunk. The grocery store. By the time it's all said and done, there's nothing left. Whatever you have left, the wife and kids take that. See? So you have nothing really at the end. Nothing. But you're struggling, working so hard, you see. So, why not put some energy into getting something where you can actually keep it? You get some permanent benefit. So if you will chant Hare Krishna mantra, you will get a benefit that no one can steal away from you. The government won't get it. The automobile company won't get it. It's your asset. Your permanent spiritual asset. The more you can chant, the more you can read, the more you can bow down before the Lord, the more you can hear from the guru and the sadhus, the Vaishnavas, all of these things, you are accruing spiritual assets which will never be taken away. So we should be a little intelligent and realize how to spend our energy very nicely. The Sri Upanishad says we must have balance. Vidyam cha vidyam yashtad vedo bayam saha. Avidyayam ritam tirtva, vidyayam ritam ashnute. You know that verse? Yeah. One who knows the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge, side by side, can alone achieve the blessings of immortality. Only that person, you see. You have to have a balance. If all you do is your material activities, you're out of balance. You will not achieve the blessings of immortality. But a person who can balance the material and spiritual sides very nicely, vidyam cha vidyam yashtad vedayam saha, one who can make that balance, you see, then he can enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Vidyayam ritam ashnute. Ashnute means he enjoys, you see. He enjoys the full blessings of immortality. So now, how much balance we're putting into the material side? We're putting everything on that side, practically speaking. So now, put as much as you can into the spiritual side. Whatever you can do, you see. If you're driving to work, you can hear spiritual lectures or music on your CD player in the car. You can rise early in the morning and get up a little early, take your bath in the early morning hours and peacefully chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If you're eating, and don't you all eat? Everyone eats, isn't it? So you offer your, make sure the food is offered to Krishna. Make a vrat, I will only take Krishna Prasad in the mouth. If it's not Krishna Prasad, I don't want to touch it. You see? That I only take the Prasad of Krishna, nothing else. In this way, if you will mold your life, you will become completely Krishnaized, and you will completely become free from all sense of being temporary, full of ignorance and full of misery. Any questions? Yeah.
I feel that all the devotional service that I do is mainly in the mode of passion.
Yeah.
So how can I take it to the next level?
Take it to the
next step.
Do you want to bring it to sattva guna, or you want to go to shuddha sattva? You want to go to sattva first? All right. That's described in the Bhagavatam. How to elevate it first to sattva gun and then to shuddha sattva. Nashtapa ishva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yuttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. By regularly attending classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that means if there are no classes being that you can attend, then you should study every day on your own, at least a few minutes, Bhagavatam. By regularly attending classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and by serving that person who is the Bhagavatam personified, that is the spiritual master, you see. By serving Guru and hearing Bhagavatam, all that is inauspicious within the heart becomes destroyed almost to nil. That's talking about Shuddha Sattva. And then it says, and thus loving service unto the transcendent Lord who is praised with transcendental hymns becomes established as an irrevocable fact. So that talks about going beyond sattva to shuddha sattva, pure goodness. So you simply have to regularly study the Bhagavatam and serve the spiritual master. That's all. Those two things. Serve the person, Bhagavatam, the Guru Maharaj, by loving service. Obeying his instructions very nicely, whatever your spiritual master has ordered you, you must take those orders as your very life and soul. And you must always worship those orders within your heart and always try to carry them out to the best of your ability. And in this way, by serving the Guru and by studying the Bhagavatam very quickly, you will throw off the influence of Rajagun and Tamagun. And you'll be swimming in the ocean of the sweetest nectar at every minute. You'll just be thanking Krishna and Prabhupada for saving you from your hellish existence within the modes of nature. Any other questions? So everyone already knows all the answers, huh? Well, you know, I have a policy for stubborn audiences that refuse to ask questions. I have a policy. It's much easier to ask the question than it is to be the person who is asked the question. I'm making easy on you by letting you ask me the question. However, I could turn the tables around and be very hard on you by asking you, picking one of you and asking you the question and making you answer the question in front of the whole assembly, you see. I could turn the tables around. If nobody has any questions, then I'm going to pick one of you and I'm going to interrogate you in front of everyone. But if somebody will ask a question, you will save the whole group. Yes.
Actually, I do want to ask, but I was just a bit hesitant because it may sound very basic. My query might be very, very fundamental.
What is the question?
She hasn't said a question yet. She's
all right.
I want to ask a question which I'm hesitating to ask.
Because she feels like she will be...
No, you must ask the question. Don't hesitate. Must ask.
These first lines which says, just fix your mind upon me. That itself seems like a very difficult task, because when you do want to fix your mind, you succeed temporarily and then the mind flies away and you have to bring it back.
Yes. So what is the question?
So, like, here it says, just fix your mind upon me and engage all your intelligence in me.
Mm-hmm.
What are the methods that one can use to succeed in doing this?
It's very simple. If a boy falls in love with a girl, or a girl falls in love with a boy, do they have a hard time fixing their mind on their beloved? They can't ever take their mind off the beloved. They wake up thinking about their beloved. Every time they see a flower, they think, oh, I want to pick it and give it to my beloved. They go by a candy shop, they think, I want to buy some candy and give it to my beloved. Whatever they see, they're always seeing their beloved. So, the answer is very simple. How to fix your mind on Krishna? The answer is by love. You simply have to learn how to love Krishna. So, do you know how to love Krishna? No, I mean, no. If your mind isn't fixed, you haven't learned to love Him yet. You may think you love Him, but I'm telling you, if your mind isn't fixed, you haven't really come to the true point of love, what love of Krishna actually means. Because someone who actually loves Krishna, they cannot, you could take the whole Australian army and to try to pull his mind off Krishna, and you couldn't budge his mind away from Krishna. When someone loves Krishna, there's no way that you can pull his or her mind away from Krishna. It's impossible. The mind will never be distracted. Someone who actually loves Krishna can never have his mind taken away from Krishna by anything. Because whatever he sees it in relationship with Krishna. He sees everything in relationship with Krishna. Isn't it a fact that everything is in relationship with Krishna? What does he say in chapter 10? Text number 8. Aham sravasya prabhavo madak sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. So everything you see is Krishna's energy. Everything, he also says, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshradam suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantamrichati. I am the enjoyer of everything. I'm the owner of everything. I'm the best friend of everyone. And only one who realizes this can have peace. So if everything is owned by Krishna, and everything is enjoyable by Krishna, how we can see anything as being separate from Krishna? Whatever you see, you should think this is the property of Krishna. It should be offered to him for his enjoyment. You see, if you love someone, don't you want to serve them hand and foot 24 hours a day? So we simply have to learn how to love Krishna, to actually feel loving affection for him at every minute. So, you may say, well, it's difficult because for me he's far, far away. He's in the books, but, you know, I don't directly see him walking down the street, or, you know, I don't directly hear him on the bank of the Jamuna playing his flute. So how I admit, for the gopis it would be easy, but for me, you know, I'm not seeing him on the bank of the Jamuna blowing the note on his flute in the full moon night of the Sharad season with his yellow dhoti and his peacock feather in the hair. You know, I'm not there. So how I will develop love? Actually, one gopi, she warned her gopi girlfriend because she had seen Krishna on the bank of the Jamuna in the full moon night of the Sharad season. And her heart was completely captured by Krishna. There was no way she could devote herself to her husband again after that. And, her, you know, her relatives. And so she warned her other girlfriend. She said, whatever you do, if you have any desire to remain peacefully absorbed in society, friendship, and love, then don't, whatever you do, don't you dare go to the bank of the Jabuna tonight and see that boy with that peacock feather in his hair and blowing on the flute and his yellow dhoti. If you do, you know, it'll all be finished. You'll be completely mad after Krishna. And you'll be totally captivated by him. So, of course, the other gopi went immediately. Oh. So, if we don't have that luxury of being there in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago when Krishna was doing his lila, what will we do? Well, we have the books. But what was it that captured us? The original devotees of the Hare Krishna movement. How did we get captured, you see? I can tell you quite simply Because Prabhupada had love of Krishna. You see. By associating with Prabhupada, we became captivated also. You simply have to find someone who loves Krishna, and you have to take shelter of that person. That's all. If you take shelter of someone who loves Krishna, then it is called contagious disease, Krishna Prem. It's highly contagious disease. That's why when Narada Muni, he was a little boy at the time, he was not devotee. His mother was a simple maidservant. So he was simply Shudra. But there was some sages during the Chaturmasya, rainy season. They, instead of wandering, they were staying in the forest near where Narada Muni was living. So he used to go there and he would take the remnants of their food. They are described in the Bhagavatam as Bhakti Vedantas. You see. They had great knowledge and they also had bhakti. They were Bhakti Vedantas. So the little boy, he would take the remnants of their food, with or without their permission. He would take the remnants of their food. And just by doing that, because they had Krishna Prem, by just taking the remnants of their food, he caught the disease also, Krishna Prem. He became the great Narad Muni after them. He was a simple son of a maidservant, but he became the great Narad Muni, the great guru Narad Muni, just by taking that remnants of the sages. So, that is one secret. You have to find exalted Vaishnavas who have love for Krishna, and you, with or without their permission, get their remnants. You see, eat the remnants of the foodstuff that they have left on their plate. That's one secret. And by that way, developing feelings, when you feel the affection for Krishna rising within your heart, then it will not be difficult to think of him. I mean, after all, when somebody's so beautiful and wonderful as Krishna, how one can not think of him? Don't we all hanker for some hero? You see, everybody in the world. We see all the kids; they get some poster of a basketball star or a cricket star. Everybody has a tendency to want to worship some big hero or a music, some musician. Everybody wants to adore some big personality. You see. But there is no person more big than Krishna. He is the greatest superstar in the history of the universe. So in this way, we have to somehow or other become attracted to Krishna. In the beginning, because we are proud, we may not want to do. We may not want to succumb to Krishna Prem, you see.
I mean, that does come naturally to people who are Krishna consciousness. But what I meant is that when you are engrossed in creating wealth in our material world, in all our regular duties to accumulate wealth, I as an individual feel detached from Krishna in doing those things. You know?
He says loving Krishna is not difficult, but in day-to-day life to
create wealth, accumulate wealth.
No, you just have to create wealth for Krishna. That's all. You just have to make money for Krishna. Do it for Krishna. Then your money-making business, it will also become bhakti. If you want to make money, Prabhupada said, if you want to be a businessman, then you should become a devotee. If he wants to be a businessman, he should become the wealthiest businessman in the whole world. There's nothing against making money. But you make it for Krishna. Yat karoshi yadashnasi. You make money for Krishna, not for yourself. You see? Whatever money you make, you should spend it in a Krishna conscious way. Of course, you can maintain yourself. That is your allotted quota. To maintain family members. But every penny must be spent in a Krishna conscious way. And as much as possible, give to support the Krishna consciousness movement. You see? You should work hard and make a lot of money. We actually encourage our members to become wealthy. Why not? Money's the honey, isn't it? If you're making money for Krishna, And you know, actually, there was a great example. One of our great acharyas, he gave 50% of his money for the Krishna consciousness movement. He gave half of his income, half of his money. So Prabhupada always encouraged that this is the rule, to give 50% of your income. So how much does, let's say I need $4,000 a month to live comfortably. You see, pay my bills, make my car payments, cover my grocery bill, you know, clothing, you know, incidentals. Let's say I need $4,000 a month. So how can I give 50%? That's $2,000. I'm not even enough to pay my maintenance, you see. So it's very simple. All you have to do is find a way to make $16,000 a month.
That's right.
You can give 50% to the movement, Hare Krishna movement. That's give $8,000 a month to the Hare Krishna movement. And Prabhupada said that 25% for saving. So you put $4,000 a month into retirement. You live on the $4,000 and you give $8,000 to the movement. So you're in great shape. You got your $4,000, you're going to have an early retirement. If you're putting $4,000 away every month for retirement, I mean, my God, that's almost $50,000 a year. And in 30 years, how much money is 30 times 50? 1.5 million? With all the interest accruing, you'll have a nice retirement, you see. So this rule that Prabhupada gave, 50%, it's very practical. But you see, you just have to find a way to make four times your maintenance needs. But if you can't do that, if somehow or other, you know, your boss won't give you that big of a raise, and you have to figure out a way to start your own business, to rake in the dough, as they say, then just whatever you can, spend your money, spend every penny in a way that's pleasing to Krishna. You see, and whatever you may have extra, you give that to help the movement. And whatever time you have, use all of that for Krishna. And this way, your accumulation of wealth can become purified. Yes.
If one loves Krishna, then what is the difficulty of chanting 16 rounds?
The question is, if you love Krishna, what is the difficulty of chanting 16 rounds? There is no difficulty if you actually love Krishna. You will easily, just like, does anybody have a difficulty in eating? Finding time to eat? Everyone loves to eat, isn't it? So everyone finds it very easy to, everyone finds somehow or other a way to eat. If I ask you, are you eating your meals these days? You say, no, I'm too busy. I don't have time to eat. No one will say that. Everyone finds a way to eat. Everyone finds some way to eat. So because we love eating. So if you love Krishna, then you will find some way to chant 16 rounds. By hook or by crook, you'll find some way to chant 16 rounds. That's it. If you really love Krishna. Even as much as you love eating, you see, you will find a way to chant 16. That's a thing. So any other questions? Yeah.
Maharajni, I have this tendency of wanting to be glorified all the time. So how do I get over it?
Actually, Prabhupada said, you're always saying all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Why don't you become glorious? So, if you want to become glorified, then why don't you act in such a way that you'll be glorified for being a devotee? A devotee is someone who doesn't want to be glorified, who simply wants to see that Krishna is glorified, the devotees are glorified, my Guru Maharaj is glorified, you see. That's a devotee. So why don't you try to become a selfless worker who has no desire to be glorified, and then automatically you'd be glorified unlimitedly. See, a devotee, the more he wants to be glorified, the less he becomes glorified. And the less he wants to become glorified, the more he becomes glorified. So why don't you be intelligent about it? If you really want to become glorified, then become completely free from that desire to become glorified. And then And then your fame will be spread all over the three worlds. Ebyash Gushuk Tribhuvana. The demigods will shower flowers on you because you become completely free from the desire to be glorified. You become the most glorified person. So one has to be intelligent to understand these points. And they say that the Bhagavad Gita says that intelligence is a feminine quality. So I see that you are situated in a woman's body, so that may, therefore you must have very good intelligence. So therefore you must use your intelligence to see how you can become completely free from this tendency to be glorified and thus become the most glorified person. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Jai. Yes?
How to control angerness?
You simply become angry at the demons. And that your anger will become purified in that way, you see. Just like Hanuman. He was kidnapped, he was captured by Ravana, you see, in his attempt to rescue Sita. He got captured. He had no direct order from Lord Ram, but when they lit his tail on fire, you see, he became, he found himself rather angry at Ravana, so he lit the whole city on fire, you see. He burned the whole city. So if you become angry at the demons, actually Prabhupada told us, he said, you should make this Digvijay, conquering Pandit. He said, you should go from village to village, city to city, town to town, and make Digvijay. If there is God, I can prove there is God. Who are you? God? Come on. That is Digvijay. So we challenge these rascals. We use our anger to chastise these rascal atheists, these rascal scientists who say life is coming from matter. We use this anger to challenge their demoniac civilization. If you will use your anger like this, then you will no longer be angry when your sense gratification is being restricted. That's how we get angry normally. When something interferes with my sense enjoyment, then I get angry, you see. But that anger has to be given up. If you use anger only to chastise the demons, you see, then you will become completely free from anger. Any other point? So, there's nothing else. We can... All right.
No. This is coming into all the time.
All right. You sit still. Hey. Sit still. You.
Shh.
You sit down. Brahmachari. Yeah.
So you're talking about anger in the sense of sense gratification, right?
Yeah.
That's right. How do you get out of that? I mean, it's all very well to say, oh, get angry at the demons, you know, or get angry at da di da di da. But how do you sort out the sense gratification? Because most of us are in this material plane. We are trying to make some steps into becoming to these classes and attending and doing a chant. We are trying to get onto a higher level, so to speak. But
At least as far as I'm concerned, I'm still sort of in this thing, in this material plane. So how do you overcome anger in that sense, you know, anger at your child, anger at your husband, anger at not getting my sense gratification. Yeah, just like, yeah, you see, right now the reason we get angry is with self-centered. We think that we're the center of the universe and that our being gratified a little make us happy. But when you become Krishna conscious, you become selfless. Instead of wanting everything for your own happiness, you understand that I have to do everything for the happiness of Krishna. And that can be done without, nothing can restrict one from giving happiness to Krishna. So actually, there's nothing to get angry about anymore. Because you, in any condition, you can always do that which is pleasing to Krishna. No one can stop you. Yeah, why would you get angry at someone? If someone is blaspheming Krishna, then you can get angry. That's good anger. But if someone is giving you a hard time, you will simply think, well, this is my own karma, that's all. This person is simply the delivery, the DHL person for my karma, that's all. I can't blame him. It could be your husband, it could be your kids, it could be your mother-in-law, you know, whatever it may be. But it's really just my own karma. So therefore I tolerate. I'm burning off my past misdeeds by suffering this abuse at the hands of others. That's all. To what extent? Unlimitedly. Unlimited tolerance. The more you're tolerant, the more you can taste the nectar of the name. So how much nectar of the name do you want to taste? You want a limited taste or unlimited taste? Tell me. Alright, so you must have unlimited tolerance. Is that alright? Anything else? Let me catch up. What is she saying? Okay. What's the question? Is there a question? No, is there a question? All right, let's give a clarification. What's her question? All the what?
All the energy.
Energy, okay.
All the everything. It will take you to that center.
Oh, whatever you do, it will take you to the center point. You can open a hospital, you can rob a bank, it's all the same. There is, Krishna says, Yeyata mang prapadyante tang spataiva baham yaham. He says, everyone follows my path, O son of Sutta. So, there is actually one pathway, but there are two directions on the pathway. You can go towards Krishna or away from Krishna. Everyone is on the Krishna path, that's a fact. But which way are they heading? You see? By engaging in pap, one is going away from Krishna, one is going down to the lower species. Won't even be a human being in the next life by engaging in pap. By engaging in pious activities, you get a little partial elevation. But when you do the bhakti, then you go very quickly all the way to Krishna. So, everyone is on the Krishna path, there's no doubt. But which way they are going? Away from Krishna or towards Krishna? So, the intelligent person, he learns how to actually go towards Krishna. And that is given in clear details in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Sarvadharman parit raja, ma mekang shadanang raja, ahang tvang sarva pape bhyo, mokshiyashami, mashuchaha. He says, give up all other duties and just completely surrender yourself to me. If you do so, I will deliver you from all of your sinful reactions. You have nothing to worry about. Don't be afraid. So Krishna is telling us exactly what we should do. Now we have a choice. Are we going to do that or are we not going to do that? Are we going to surrender to Krishna or I'm going to surrender to my own mind? He takes care of everyone according to their degree of surrender. So, he reciprocates with us according to our degree of surrender. So how much reciprocation would you like? A little bit? A lot? Or would you like unlimited reciprocation from God? You have your choice. How much do I want to reciprocate? How much reciprocation, loving reciprocation, do I want with God? So inasmuch as they surrender to me, Krishna says, I reward them accordingly. So you have your choice. I just want to offer a little sugar candy once a week to Krishna. Alright, well I get that much reciprocation. What about offering all of my food to Krishna before I eat? Then I get much more reciprocation. Yes. You see, generally the religionists, they will go to the temple, the synagogue, the mosque, the cathedral, and they will pray to God, give me this, give me that, give me, give me, give me. Is that love of God or love of oneself? Yes, yourself. So, God will give, but you won't get Him. You'll get that money, you'll get that power, you'll get that prestige, you'll get the things you beg Him for, you flatter Him for, but you won't get Him. So, that is called cheating religion, because you're being cheated. If one takes religion as a process of fulfilling material desires, then actually you're being cheated by whoever taught you to pray like that. You see, that's what my parents taught me. They said, you should pray to God to get a pair of cowboy boots. You see? Well, see, knowing the central point is God is one thing. That is called jnana. But to actually live in a state of consciousness where all of your thoughts, words, and deeds are dovetailed with the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, that is called vijnana. It's a big difference between knowing that everything is coming from God and that everything should be offered to Him and actually doing it. That requires expert training from a bona fide spiritual master. How to dovetail every thought, every word, every deed in all times, all places and circumstances with the pleasure of that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Some people think, well, Krishna is everything and everyone is Krishna. So whatever I'm doing is Krishna Bhakti. But that's not the Krishna that's speaking in the Bhagavad Gita. When he says surrender to me, he means me, the person Krishna. Not to your brother, not to your sister, not to anything else, but Krishna, directly, the person Krishna. See, we have a tendency to think, well, Krishna is everything, everyone's Krishna. Just like we had one program for our temple, that if one businessman, he opened a shop, one of our members, and he said, we suggested to him that you make a little can, so the profit from the first sale every day, that's for Krishna. He said, yes, it's very nice. This way Krishna will bless my business, I will be successful. So yes, the profit from every first sale of the day will go to Krishna. And then after some time, we came by to pick up the can for the temple. And he said, well, I gave it to my brother. My brother is Krishna. So that side of Krishna bhakti does not actually liberate one from the material existence. We have to understand there is that person Krishna who spoke the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago. It's not that everyone is him. He is a distinct individual person. And he's in the spiritual world. He's the source of all that he is. And we are meant to learn how to do everything for the pleasure of that person. The one who spoke the Bhagavad Gita. We are meant to do everything in the way that he is happy with us. So we have to learn that art from the bona fide spiritual master, from the sadhus, and from the shastra. What exactly does that person want me to do at every minute? How does he want me to think? How does he want me to speak? How does he want me to act? That is a science, the science of bhakti. It's not that I can do anything and everything, and it's bhakti. We are very much caught up in serving ourselves. That's our disease right now. I'm self-centered, you're self-centered. It's our nature. That's why we're in the cycle of birth and death. We're very self-centered. So to break out of that is not an easy thing. You have to actually learn. It's a struggle we all go through. We have to learn how to do everything for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Not what we think satisfies you, but what He says satisfies you. There's a big difference. I may think I'm satisfying God by the way I'm doing things. But then if we hear from a bona fide spiritual master, we'll find out, no, actually he was very dissatisfied with me. So, you know, it takes training. It's not an easy thing. You can just do whatever you want and say it's all for God. It's not like that. Yeah. We've seen. Yeah, God is great when things are going nicely, but God is bad when things aren't going well. That means I think I'm the center. Why God is doing this? See, I find fault with God when I failed my exam, you see, for medical school. Oh, God is bad. No. Any other questions?
Difficulty is what one should think. He is facing some difficulties. He is overwhelmed with all the difficulties. He is struggling for the life and everything. At that time, he cannot think about God. He cannot think about bhakti and all those things. So
why not? Why you cannot think? That means you haven't trained yourself. That means you haven't been trained. The devotee, he trains himself to always remember God in all times, places, and circumstances. You can't remember God, that means you're not trained up. You weren't trained up. It's an art, just like anything else, like driving a car. If you put a person who has no idea of how to drive a car in a car, they'll have an accident because they're not trained. But if you train them, then they can drive the car very nicely. So this bhakti is, the bhakti yoga is an art, just like driving a car. Once you're trained how to do it, then you can easily do it very nicely in all circumstances. You can practice bhakti. Just like someone who's an expert driver, they can drive slow, they can drive fast, they can drive medium, they can drive in the rain, they can drive in the snow, they can drive in all circumstances. They're expert driver. So someone who is trained in bhakti, they can do bhakti in all situations, good, bad, beautiful, ugly, every condition of life. They can remain solidly fixed in bhakti. questions more? Yes.
How does one change one's attitude? Because for a lot of us, it's an accumulation of karma, of what we have been brought up with, and the environment that we live that kind of goes to create this attitude. And in a lot of situations, one comes to the realization that unless this attitude fundamentally is changed, all the other things, nothing else makes progress. So how can one do as an individual towards changing this attitude for himself or herself, or towards helping others who seek this change?
Change of attitude by the way they have been trained according to their lifestyle and karma, whether it is coming with karma or so, how one can change their attitude or help others to change their attitude.
Well, the first thing is, physician, heal thyself. If you want to help others to be in the proper bhakti mood, you cannot do that unless you have first done. How you can train someone to drive a car if you don't know how to drive a car? First, you master the art, and then easily you can train others how to do. So, how to master the art of always being Krishna conscious? Therefore, a guru is required. Therefore, the sadhus are required. The scriptures are required. If you will take help from the spiritual master and the devotees and the scripture, then you can learn how to do it. You have to find out what is pleasing to Krishna. That's the first thing. You have to find out what does Krishna want of me. It's like, let's say you're an employee, your first day at a new job. How do you know how to perform on the job? You have to find out from the people who already work there what you're supposed to do in this company, what the boss expects, isn't it? The first day you're nervous because you know you may make some big blunders, so you're really careful, you listen to everyone, you take the instructions, you do exactly what you're told, and gradually you learn the ropes so you can go to work and you feel confident. You know what you're doing, you can do it well, and you can even train other people who are new, you see. So it's just like working for a new company. You have to find out, in this case, the boss is Krishna. And the supervisor is the spiritual master. The co-workers are the devotees. So you just have to find out exactly how things go on in this corporation. What's the system of operation here? How do things happen? What am I supposed to do? What's my duty? What's my job description? What do they expect of me? What are the deadlines? Everything. Gradually you'll learn. You have to be patient. You can't learn it all the first day on the job. It may take a few weeks before you start being because there's so much you don't know. I know it's overwhelming sometimes. You go into some new department, everybody knows exactly what they're doing, you have no clue. You're just at the mercy of all the other employees if they'll help you out to get oriented. Isn't it like them? So, when one takes up the bhakti path, it's a very similar thing. In the beginning, we have no idea. The whole idea is the idea we have about bhakti sometimes is actually quite wrong also. There's one music school in Italy where they teach the piano. So, if you already know how to play the piano, they charge you more money than the people who don't know how to play the piano. You see? Because they have to unteach you all the things you're doing wrong. So a person who's a blank slate is just starting off brand new. They have an easier job teaching that person. This is a problem in India. Everyone has their idea of what is bhakti and what is Krishna worship. You know, there's so many. That's why Prabhupada couldn't get the movement started in India. He started in America, the American, who had no idea of Krishna or bhakti. We didn't know anything. We were just completely blank slates, you know. And Prabhupada was able to easily get us fixed up in doing the standard bhakti according to the great acharyas. Because we didn't have any misconceptions of what bhakti is. So, you all have, there's so many misconceptions about Krishna, about Radha, about Ram, and the demigods. There's so many misconceptions going around Hindu culture, Hindu civilization, that it sometimes takes a while just to get to square one, you know, just to get to the starting point, to really do things in the right way. So you have to be patient. You have to hear from the devotees, hear from the gurus, read the books, you know, sincerely chant, beg Krishna to help you, beg the devotees to help you. Everyone will be very kind to you. If you show a sincere desire to learn, everyone will be very kind to you. It's actually by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas and Krishna that we make progress. It's not by our intelligence. It's not by our pious qualities. It's by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas and Krishna. That's how we make advancement, by their blessings. So somehow or other, become a worthy recipient for the blessings of Guru and Krishna, and then everything will become revealed to you in due course.
We need a big detox program.
Detox?
How many philosophies?
Philosophical detox. The worst one in India is that we're all God, you know. That's the worst one. It's called, we call it Mayavad philosophy. A Mayavad means one who sticks to the position of Maya, the form of God is Maya. There was one famous commentator in India. He was actually formerly the president of India. He wrote a very popular commentary on Bhagavad Gita in which he says, it is not to Krishna that we should surrender, but it is to the unborn, unmanifest that is within you, within me, and within everything. That is what we're meant to surrender to. This is a direct slap in the face of Krishna. Krishna's...
Dr. Radhakrishna?
Yes, yes, you got it. Did you read the commentary? He said, it is not to Krishna that we should surrender. Can you imagine what a slap in the face that is? Krishna directly orders everyone, surrender to me, and he says, it is not to Krishna that we should surrender. It is a slap in the face of Krishna. Krishna says, actually, in the chapter number 9, text number 10, Vajananti manumudha manushim tandamashrutam parang bhavam vajananto mamabhuta maheshvaram. He says, fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that exists. So they tried to bring Krishna down from his position as the supreme lord and make him an ordinary person. Or maybe, as the Indian government published one document, a powerful aborigine. The Indian government said Krishna was simply a powerful aborigine. It's like you have aborigines here in Australia, you see. He was an Indian aborigine in the forest, from the forest of Vrindavan, a tribal aborigine, you see. And because he was powerful, they made all these myths up about him, you see. So, India has been spoiled by these rascal commentators like Dr. Radhakrishna, who bring Krishna down. They say, no, not to Krishna. But this is ridiculous. Throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, me, man mano mama bad bhakto majadji mang namaskuru mam mevaishasi yuktvai vang atmanang matparayanaha. In this verse, Krishna, how many times does Krishna say, me? He says, engage your mind thinking of me. Offer obeisances and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. In one verse he has said me 4 times, and this Dr. Radhakrishna says, not to Krishna. If I say I am thirsty, bring me a glass of water. Is it? He understood. But if someone else says, oh, Guruji doesn't mean me, he means the sink. He means put the water in the sink. That's called mental speculation. If Guru Maharaj says, me, bring me a glass of water, I am thirsty, bring a glass of water to me right now because I am thirsty. I mean, it's pretty clear. So Krishna is saying, engage your mind thinking of me, offer obeisances, worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you'll come to me. And they say, no, not to Krishna. I mean, it's absolutely offensive. And there's so many commentaries like that. I read another one. I was visiting with one professor of religion, at the Rice University in Houston, Texas, USA. And he was wondering why you just read this Bhagavad Gita as it is. I said, well, Bhagavad Gita as it is quite different from the other Bhagavad Gitas. He said, I don't know about that. So I just saw one Gita on the shelf. I had no idea what edition. I said, hand me that Bhagavad Gita. So I opened it up to the verse I just quoted, 9:34. Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. So here's how the man translated it, the scholar. It sounds very similar, so listen carefully for the difference. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Offer obeisance and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, everything was the same, right? Surely you will become me. That's how he translated it. Surely, instead of come to me, surely you will become me.
That's the position of Ravana.
Yeah. That means he wants to enjoy Radharani. He wants to steal Radharani from Krishna. I want to become Krishna so I can enjoy Radharani and the gopis. That is demoniac, like Ravana, yes. So this is how they're translating Bhagavad Gita. You see, they're spoiling Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, we stick to Bhagavad Gita as it is. These others are Bhagavad Gita as it is not. You see? When Prabhupada came to America, some lady asked, what edition of Bhagavad Gita would you recommend that I read, Swamiji? And Prabhupada could not, in good conscience, recommend any edition of the Bhagavad Gita to read. So he had to make his own edition, you see. So now if you study...
But the translation is the same in any Bhagavad Gita, as far as the Sanskrit is concerned. It's only the
Right. The Sanskrit is the same. So if you are learned, highly learned, and you can read the Sanskrit directly, then there is no problem. But most of us are not highly learned in Sanskrit. And even we see the Sanskrit scholars, because they have not heard the commentary of pure devotees, they misconstrue the statement. Actually, it is not... Bhagavad Gita is elementary Sanskrit. I studied Sanskrit. I took one semester. And just from one semester of Sanskrit, I can see how perfectly Prabhupada is translating Bhagavad Gita. Yes?
To her, what she mentioned, she said that one knows the Sanskrit, then they can... The translation.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't say that. What I said was... Bhagavad Gita, with every book is translated, all Sanskrit is the same.
Sanskrit is the same. But the devil is in the details. The translation and the commentaries. That's where the devil sneaks in.
Translation also, the great scholars of Bhagavad Gita, Sanskrit, have derived the wrong meaning of it. The verses.
No, the translation also. They mistranslate. Like this, and the example is what I just cited to you.
Yeah.
You will become me. That's not what Krishna says. They're speculating. They're throwing in their own... They want to present their own philosophy that you can become God, and they're using the Bhagavad Gita to present their own philosophy. You see?
The main point is that no matter how one is Sanskrit scholar or whatever, they cannot understand Bhagavad Gita as long as they are not devotees. Krishna says, I'm giving this knowledge to you because you are my devotee, you are not envious of me.
So you're saying that Krishna knows what he's talking about?
He does not know why he's talking to
me. Krishna is speaking truth, is that what you're saying? Yes, Krishna says, unless you are my devotee, you cannot understand this Bhagavad Gita. So therefore we should read the edition from devotee, Vaishnava. If someone is simply a scholar, Krishna says they cannot understand this Bhagavad Gita. It cannot be understood by scholars. Krishna directly says it himself in the Bhagavad Gita, because bhaktosi me sakacheti rahasyam hitadutamam, because you're my devotee, therefore you can understand. Yeah.
Can you tell please tell us that example of that South Indian Brahmana which in Srirangam that Lord Chaitanya met. There was that illiterate Brahmana.
Who understood the meaning of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Chaitanya too said that.
Yeah.
That story.
So an illiterate Brahmin who is a Vaishnava, he can understand Bhagavad Gita better than any non-devotee scholar. That's a thing.
What is the story? She's asking, what is the story? Of the illiterate Brahmana, what is the story?
She would like to know the story?
Yes, I would.
Please.
All right.
Everyone loves stories.
So, once upon a time, around 500 years ago, in a very famous holy place of India, you know that place, you may have heard, Ranga Chetra. There it was.
They call it Sri Rangam now.
Sri Rangam. Okay. Yeah. So, there was one Brahmin there. He could not read. But his spiritual master had ordered him that every day, my dear disciple, you must read 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. So he would do that. He would sit there with there was the manuscript. They didn't have printing press in those days. There was hand copies. You know. So he would sit with his hand copy manuscript and he'd be looking over the pages. He couldn't make out a single word of it, you see. But Guru Maharaj ordered him. So he's looking. And everyone's laughing. Look at that stupid Brahmin. He can't read, but yet he thinks he's reading Bhagavad Gita. He was so many jokes going around the community, you see. So Lord Chaitanya, he was wandering through South India at that time. And he came to that holy place. And he heard this talk about this illiterate Brahmin who can read Bhagavad Gita, you see. So Lord Chaitanya was curious. Let us see this Brahmin, you see. This illiterate Brahmin who is reading Bhagavad Gita. So Lord Chaitanya came there into the temple and there he was sitting. And he was used to being criticized. He'd been hearing it for weeks and months. But when he saw Lord Chaitanya approaching him in his beautiful golden effulgence, you see, just radiating compassion and love, you know, in all directions from his transcendental body, he could understand, this person has not come to criticize me. He knew there was something different about Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya said, Brahman, you're illiterate and you're reading Bhagavad Gita. How is that, Brahman? He said, yes, what can I do? My Guru Maharaj has ordered me that every day I must read 18 chapters. So I'm sitting here and I'm turning these pages. I'm trying to read Bhagavad Gita. Lord Chaitanya said, but Brahman, I see you're not only making that reading attempt, I see you are crying also, Brahmana. Why are you crying? He said, oh, when I sit here with the Bhagavad Gita, within my heart I can see how Krishna, he is driving the chariot of Arjuna, and he is so kind upon his devotees. I am just amazed to see that even though he is the Supreme Lord himself, he is acting as the charioteer of his bhakta. When I think how Krishna is so kind to his bhakta, I just start crying like anything. So Lord Chaitanya, he said, Brahmana, he embraced him. He said, Brahmana, you are the real scholar of Bhagavad Gita. The others, they thought, oh, I am big pandit. I am very learned Sanskrit scholar. And this one, who is this rascal? He doesn't know any Sanskrit. He can't read the Sanskrit. But actually, he was accepted as the greatest scholar of Bhagavad Gita by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So now you know the story of the illiterate Brahmin.
It's good to recite to somebody else. It's always good to know. That was the way, like, whole idea of learning stories, so you can pass it on to others when they.
Yes, whatever you have learned, you must pass it on. That is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh amara agaya guru hoya tare e desh. When Prabhupada opened the temple in Hyderabad, India, many pious Indian ladies and gentlemen came and attended that ceremony. And in that ceremony, he said, if you're living in a neighborhood, you should become the guru of that neighborhood by preaching this message of Bhagavad Gita, you see. So every one of you, you must become gurus amongst your associates. You must preach this message of Bhagavad Gita. You must enlighten them in this time.
Lord Chaitanya has given instructions to all the Indians.
And especially to all Indians. There was another order given to all Indians. Bharata Bhumite Haila Manushya Janmajara. Yeah. Whoever has taken his birth in the holy land of India must make their life successful by becoming fixed up in Krishna consciousness, and they must perform Pada Upakara, the highest welfare work of spreading Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So Krishna, by Krishna's arrangement, you are here in Australia. Lord Chaitanya has given you a mission now to make this country Krishna conscious. That is your duty.
True.
Given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you must make Australia Krishna conscious.
Yeah. Hey, I guess you've got to spread it wherever you can, wherever you are. It's true.
So because you are here now, you make them Krishna conscious. And if you else, then you make them. You go to New Zealand, you make them Krishna conscious. If you go to America, you make, wherever you go, you make them Krishna conscious. That is your duty as someone who has taken birth in India. Everyone's prepared? Become a missionary now for Lord Chaitanya? At least within your own family. Within your own home, at least you can do this in your home.
Subconsciously, we do it all the time without knowing, because we discuss the learnings that we have accumulated here with family, friends, people at work. So without knowing, we're doing it, and we at least have kindled an interest. So what is this Gita? And we tell them that it's the science of whatever we've learned, we share it with them. And so in that way, indirectly, we are doing.
Well, if you realize it's actually a duty, then you won't be so shy.
Yeah, that's right.
We have a tendency to be very shy about it. But if you realize it's my duty, I must do this.
Yes, then you do it.
Then we become emboldened. What is that? Emboldened, yes. We become more brave to speak out.
When you're talking about it to different religions and cultures, then you know, you're just a bit careful that you don't impose what you've learned. You just discuss with them.
Now, this is one of the ideas that has been going around in Hinduism for a long time. Do not impose. But do you know, that's why, I can tell you, that's why we have a Hindu-Muslim problem in India right now. Because the Brahmins thought, they thought that you shouldn't teach this to anyone. You don't want to impose. Actually, it is not imposing, it is blessing. There is blessing. They didn't want to teach the low-class people how to elevate themselves. So the low-class people said, why should I be a low-class Hindu? I'll become a Muslim. You see? So now there's so much turmoil in India, Hindu-Muslim turmoil. Because the Brahmins did not do their duty of teaching the low-class people how to come a higher standard of consciousness.
Yeah. You see? But the thing is that we do like to share. I mean, we do share. And then we probably think that it's up to them to decide whether.
Of course, it is up to them.
Take it forward or not.
So you should share it in a very expert way, just like someone who is expert in the art of marketing. They share in a very, very expert way. It's like Coca-Cola Company, you see.
Selling poison.
How expertly they advertise Coca-Cola.
Selling poison.
So that everybody is drinking Coca-Cola all over the world, you see. You work for Coca-Cola? Really? I didn't. You're working in marketing? You've been actually doing Coca-Cola's marketing? Yes. Just see how the Supercell. I had no idea, but the Supercell brought that up. Is that fair?
It's true. Yes.
So, actually, Coca-Cola Company is very imposing. But you have to do it in a very expert way where people don't feel they're being imposed upon. They're thinking, oh, you're blessing me. Things go better with Coca-Cola.
That was, things go better with girls. That's what they used to say.
Things go better with Hare Krishna. So just like they are very expert at imposing without making people feel they're being imposed upon, you also must become very expert at imposing Krishna upon them without making them feel they're being imposed upon. That's the art. There's nothing wrong with imposing Krishna because it delivers them from cycle of birth and death, but they should not feel it's being imposed. That is called expert marketing. I'll give you an example. One of my godbrothers, he was from India actually, but he had a job working as a computer consultant in the U.S. So what he would do, every day he would come to his office, he'd put Bhagavad Gita on the desk, visible, anybody can see Bhagavad Gita as it is. So one co-worker, American boy, he was very attracted, what is this? So he ended up becoming a devotee. So there are very subtle ways you can, you know, give them Krishna consciousness. Put a Bhagavad Gita on your, as it is, on your desk every day at work, and then read it during your break time. People go, what is this book you're reading, you see? And then you can say, well, I have an extra copy here. I can lend it to you, or I can give it to you. You can read it. Just have a few extra Bhagavad Gitas in your desk at work, you see. Keep one on the desk and have a few extras. You'd be amazed what you can do just by having the book available. And they don't feel you're imposing on them. They actually wanted, they were coming to you begging for it, you see. They're curious. So the idea is when the curiosity is there, be ready to take it to the next step. Be prepared. When the curiosity comes, be prepared to satisfy their curiosity and whet their appetite even more to find out even more. That's the art of preaching. Yes.
My husband has started Bhagavad Gita classes at work, and that Prabhu there is his colleague. So he...
Did you feel you were being imposed upon?
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh?
In the sense, I was inspired, I should say.
You did feel you were being imposed upon? Or you were attracted to it?
Attracted and inspired to find it.
Yeah. So it can be done. Here's living proof. That's good. So, how's our schedule? Wrap it up? All right. So we thank you all very much for so kindly hearing. Now, if you will apply these teachings in your life, I guarantee you, you will find it to be unlimitedly sublime. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
Divya Sankarshan Prabhu ki jai.